You're listening to the Dan and Cody podcast, episode number 37. Do you hear that? Ring-a-ling ding.
37, boys and girls.
This is the Dan and Cody podcast.
A toy boat.
The arsonist had oddly shaped feet.
This is the Dan and Cody podcast.
Red leather, yellow leather.
Saddle up, partner.
Dan, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right.
What?
It's getting to me, man. I'm getting tired.
Yeah, the babies are wearing you out?
Fuck, she's wearing me out, man. Well. It's hard. I went back to work this week.
Congrats.
Thanks, man. I was going a little stir crazy.
Working dad.
I woke up like that Monday. Well, this past Monday, I woke up and I was like, okay, get your shower. Kiss the wife goodbye, kiss little baby on the forehead.
And grab the lunch pail, yeah, head out the door.
I'm off to work to provide for my family.
That's awesome.
And that, right when I walked in, that wore off. And I was like, oh, shit. I mean,
when you walked into the office?
Yeah. Okay. But, I love my job. I absolutely love it. But, you know, there's a little cute little baby at home, man.
Yeah.
And now Jenny is texting me pictures and stuff of her crying or in cute clothes, and she's like, "We miss you." And I'm like, "God damn it." Like, melts my heart at work. And we're getting about 4 hours, 5 hours sleep.
Nice.
Lots of coffee.
Okay.
Lots of candy.
Do you have a particular blend of coffee you're drinking?
I'm doing a Keurig Donut House.
Okay, that's a good choice.
Yeah, and my dad picked up the Dunkin' K-Cups.
Oh, wow, that's really sweet of John.
Running that with a teaspoon of Shug.
Your dad's name's John, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
And the French Vanilla Coffee Mate.
Okay. Bloop, bloop. Look at you. Got a little flavor to your Joe.
You know it.
I love that. I'm happy to hear it.
It's delicious. Keeping me running. Good. How about you?
Nope.
That's it.
This is where I'm at.
That's it. All right.
I ordered a computer, and I got all my parts because I build it myself.
Yeah, I see it over
there. So I ordered my computer. I know we kind of chatted about this earlier, but I'm gonna express my frustration. So I've been super excited about it. Ordered the computer, got all my parts, came in the mail, opened the boxes, real happy. I go to my final box, which is the computer tower, and the tower is where, when you see a computer, you're like, oh, that's a computer.
That's what people see.
That's basically what people associate as the computer. And I open the box, and inside is a giant piece of luggage. So Amazon kind of screwed the pooch on that one.
So if they sent the wrong thing?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, they sent the wrong thing. So.
You know what that is?
A mistake?
That is somebody at the Amazon warehouse who has that pager on their hip. And they are going on efficiency or whatever.
Yes.
And they got to where your computer should have been, saw the luggage, their time on their hip was running out, and they were like, if I don't put this luggage in there, I'm going to be fired. Because they were probably on strike two.
Is that how that works?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I heard that man's canned then because... It is nothing. It's not even close to a computer case.
But because he sent you the wrong thing, maybe he can blame the person who put that there and tagged it as your computer. Then he can be like, that's why my efficiency got fucked up.
Wow. Okay.
You know?
All right.
We just had this talk with our FedEx reps. Well, we were talking shit on Amazon.
Cleared that up.
Yeah.
Good. Good.
Yeah, man.
So.
But, yo, how do you put together a computer? How do you know how to do that?
A lot of time. I was a young man at one point. I was very into electronics and tech stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It really hasn't changed in the last 15 years from what I've read on the interwebs. So it's looking like I'm ready to dive back into that world. And
You just watch a YouTube video and then go for it?
No, I can do it myself. You just plug some parts in, you turn it on, bing, bang, boom, install some Windows, and before you know it, you're seeing through to the world.
You're the kid who took apart their Nintendo and
No, I wasn't that kid. I didn't do that. My brother did that,
really?
But he couldn't put it back together.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Damn, man.
I just like computers. I was a big fan. I think they're cool and they're really, they're really modular in a way, and you can do a lot of stuff with them.
Yeah.
So it's really awesome. If you ever want me to build one for you, let me know.
I'm looking forward to seeing what becomes of all these boxes on
cool.
that desk.
Well, I'm excited to show you.
Great.
So go team.
Today,
what
we have a very, very special boy here with us.
Really? Aside from Michael Tabb, our delightful audio guy.
Right. We have a man. His name...
We have a man, people.
We have a man. His name is Caleb Stenzinger. And
that's with an S.
That's with an S and a Z, right?
Yeah, it is, which is really cool.
It's an S and a Z. Let me tell you about Caleb. He is...
You know what? I want to hear Caleb tell me about Caleb.
But let's spare the intro here for young Caleb.
I'm working on it. I'm trying to spare it.
I'm telling you, this is great.
Okay.
This is great. Okay. Caleb is a world traveler. He is from Chicago. He moved to L.A. in 2005, started his education at Santa Monica Community, then went to Berkeley in California, the Bears. Aaron Rodgers went there.
Yeah, Cal.
Jillian Gordon went there.
Yeah, Jillian.
That's all I know of the people who went there. He studied. He got a bachelor's in English. In English. Studied abroad at Cambridge. Got his master's in 18th century literature and romanticism, specializing in satirical literature. Produced and directed Les Mis. He put on his own freaking play. He went to Queen Mary University of London.
Okay.
Came back to LA and then started a satirical news website called The Lanx. Caleb.
Was it The Likes or The Lanx?
The Lanx. THELANX.com.
The Lanx.
Well, it's good to hear your voice.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
So it sounds like you're an accomplished individual.
Well, I mean, it sounds like it from Dan's intro, definitely.
You're the man,
it
Caleb.
Took him a while to spit it all out, it's that's hard. For sure.
You're a world traveler, yeah, man. I had to do you right.
I got to give a shout-out to my mom. She did help me with Les Mis.
She did.
We co-directed Les Mis together in Kankakee, Illinois.
Dude.
Kankakee Valley Theater.
That's my favorite musical.
Was it quite the production?
It was, yeah. It was a big deal.
You had like full sets and everything.
We built a revolving turntable stage.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's
very
awesome.
Very hard. Shout out also to Kevin Embling, who built that stage.
Nice.
Yeah, he was amazing.
Dude, you beast, buddy.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We know Caleb through Marshall, and Caleb would help work at the prop store.
Who?
This guy. You probably haven't heard of him.
I don't know.
Who is Marshall anyway?
I don't know. That name smells like garbage.
An often featured guest.
Often featured.
Oh, that Marshall.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Marshall.
He's the sweetest.
Caleb worked at Prop Store, works at Prop Store. He's like comes back and forth, like I said.
Yeah.
And I knew Caleb was awesome when like we would go. We have a McRib love. we love the McDonald's McRib. And we would get on the website, go to like McRib locator and find them and eat them. And in Caleb's car was the Les Mis CD, and I was like, "You gotta pop this in." And we would sing a lot of Les Mis tunes. I will spare everyone.
Can you tell me what exactly a McRib is?
Well. I mean, it's the most amazing sandwich that McDonald's has ever put out. That's for sure.
It's mystical.
Yeah, it's shaped like a rib, made out of a sponge, but smothered in barbecue sauce, which is really what makes it.
It is pressed into a rib form,
uh-huh,
with bone in to look like bone in.
So there's bone in it?
No.
But it's made to look like bone in ribs, like a rack of ribs.
Okay.
And by, I think we found that it contains a bleaching agent that also found in yoga mats.
Yep.
Yeah. You never had a McRib?
But still,
I can't recall
every November,
McRib
time.
So are McRibs around year round, or it's just November?
No, yeah, it's always a temporary thing.
It's a special thing. Comes and goes.
Yep.
Okay, well, good to know. Maybe the three of us could go do a podcast eating McRib.
Yeah.
For our new segment, we're going to call Moments.
It's really worth it is because it goes away for 11 months out of the year.
Right. What are you looking for?
I needed a pen and paper. That's a really good idea.
What?
I got a pen.
Eat McRibs?
No, Moments.
Moments. Moments by Dan and Cody.
So, Caleb... You tell us about the Lanx. How, well, actually, first of all, like, you have, your major is insane. Like, I majored in mass communication.
Hey, nice.
You majored in...
You're using it.
Yeah. Look at this. We're mass communicating. Yep. We're trying. But, so for an average person who doesn't really understand even the word satire, what can you tell us about that? Shed some light on what you're into here.
Okay, well, satire is a form of art or literature or, I don't know, sometimes comedy, news, television. It's kind of expanded over the centuries, that pokes fun at, you know, society, kind of speaks truth to the government, the king, the whoever's in charge.
So it, like, pokes fun at the...
Yeah, I mean, just so I can clarify this.
Well, it
takes humor, irony, exaggeration, or ridicule to expose and criticize people's stupidity or vices, particularly in the context of contemporary politics or
someone Google
topical issues.
Yeah, someone's Googling. I'd say that's pretty close to what it is.
No, I mean, well, it also plays on pop culture a little bit.
Yeah, so. I never really know how to talk about it because one time someone asked me what satire is, and I said, you know, it's a form of art that exposes folly, and she said, folly? No one uses that word. What?
Right.
You know, which is just like foolishness.
And then you slapped her, and, like, the 1865 yeah. version of yourself.
Well, that's the thing, because I studied 18th century satire, and so I have all these words about satire that are no longer used, and so it's really like foolishness. And but then I was studying at Second City.
Nice.
Sketch writing and improv, and satire is huge at Second City. That's mm-hmm. kind of their number one thing. And day one of my sketch writing class, they said, "What is satire?" And I didn't speak up because I didn't want to say, "Well, it exposes folly." Yeah. Because I didn't want
folly, sir.
And that's
folly.
Exactly what they said.
Really?
They said, "Well, it's a form of art that exposes folly." And I almost walked out.
That's it.
Well, luckily you stayed around.
Yeah.
The only time I've heard the word follies is like when it's connected to like a DVD of sports follies,
right?
Bloopers, yeah, blooper reels and all that,
or like Ziegfeld Follies, which was like a big series of movies in the 30s.
That's right,
or something. So yeah, and my focus was 18th century satirical literature.
Okay.
But the themes, the styles of satire are kind of stand the test of time.
Right.
I mean, you can compare Colbert and Stewart to, you know, Jonathan Swift and Alexander Pope, who are the guys that I really studied most.
Those are your aces?
Yeah, those are my guys.
Poe was super dark, right?
Pope. And like, Pope. Not,
oh,
not
Pope.
Edgar Allan.
Not E.G.?
No.
Right. E.A.?
No.
Mm-hmm. E.A.P.? Yeah. My man from B-Mar? What's up, dog?
He was.
Yeah. E.A.P.?
Yes,
he was. Uh-huh. Yes, he was. Banging his daughter or something? Or like a 13-year-old? That happened.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that.
I haven't heard
Google
that.
It. Google it. He was into some shit.
Yeah.
Anyway,
well, that's cool, man. That's I appreciate that.
What were your favorite pieces of literature?
So, Gulliver's Travels by Jonathan Swift is probably the greatest piece of satirical literature.
Probably one of the best made-for-TV movies with Ted Danson.
Yeah, well, that's the problem is that you get the Ted Dansons and you get the Jack Blacks who, you know, focus on the idea of, like, oh, there's a giant in a land of little people,
exactly.
Or there's a little person in a land of giants.
Certainly.
But really, that was, like, those ideas and, you know, those characters of the giant and the little person was used to expose the folly of English society.
Yes.
And
royalty, the people.
So is it satirical that that big giant falls in love with little tiny woman?
No,
that's not. Was that
no,
irony?
Well,
is that irony?
There are some. I mean, it's something like the tiny person is, you know, can see all of the disgusting things about humanity.
Okay,
you know, and so like he's little, so he sees all our pores and all our, you know,
right,
everything gross. That
the
we do.
Raw.
Yeah, but then when he's huge, when he's a giant, because Gulliver travels between a couple different, like, you know, I don't know, 6 or 7 different lands and islands. Uh-huh. And so the first one, he is, you know, tiny and everyone, or no, he's a giant and everyone's small. They're the Lilliputians.
Right.
And like he like, you know, kicks them around and stomps on them, you know, and then they, sure, he makes friends with them. But it's, that's kind of the idea that, you know, when you're removed from a certain society or when you're among foreigners, you kind of revert back to your old ways and you
think, yeah,
you think that you're the most important person in the world because everyone else is the other or different.
Right.
And so, yeah, that the first, yeah, few chapters of this book where he's going to these different lands are really mostly about this idea that when you're among the other, like foreigners or people who are different from you, that you just
freak out. Do you feel, yeah, that translates in the modern day? And I'm not saying, like, do you think the times show that, but I mean, do you think if a regular Joe was to pick up the book, not living in that time period, do you think that that would read that way? I get that there's major themes that kind of play across, like,
right,
humans, like, you know, human society and the way that, yeah, plays out. But do you feel that that is that would run? Like, do you think it stands the test of time?
I would say that more than any other satire from the time. Maybe perhaps because you have these, you know, bright and colorful and exotic and fun characters that people can, you know, get into, and so they, you know, it's kind of like universals. Yeah. He's dealing in universals. And so, yeah, like at one point he gets picked up by a woman who, you know, could be beautiful, but because she's a giant, he sees everything that's disgusting about her.
Yeah.
And so, you know, obviously we can relate to having pores and having, you know, and then,
I hate pores.
They're terrible. They clog, mm-hmm, up.
Gosh,
they, poor, get infected. It's disgusting.
Yeah, but then a lot of people lose their interest in the later books because he goes to a land where everybody is a horse,
mm-hmm,
and the horses are really intelligent, and, yeah, they're the most intelligent, like, beings. And there's another, like, animal that is kind of an ape, but is supposed to be man, which are the Yahoos, and that's where the word Yahoo comes from.
Oh,
Yahoo.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's the Yahoos and the Winhams, and so the horses, the Winhams, think that he's a Yahoo, and so they treat him like an animal, and he tries to prove his intelligence to them by learning their language, and he starts becoming like them, and he wants to walk on all fours, and, you know, and so...
Dude, just, you got me wanting to dive into Gulliver's Travels right now. Yeah, like, but I'm going to buy, like, every movie and read...
Right, well, yeah, the movies don't get into that part. The movies just
The movies play around with the, you know,
yeah,
big and small.
Big and small.
Yeah, right, I mean, okay. But there's way more to it.
Definitely. Nice. Yeah, and so I started the Lanks, actually, to just post kind of my own essays and articles about things like Gulliver's Travels and Pope, and instantly I was like, you know, no one's gonna read this.
Yeah.
So I started updating it and, you know, discussing satire and how, you know, Colbert can be compared to Swift and how, you know, Stewart can be compared to Pope and this and that. And I was writing, like, long blog posts that, again, people weren't necessarily...
Where were you writing these posts?
I started that in England when I was getting my master's. And so at the time, it was just kind of a blog, you know.
Sure.
Blog via Facebook? Were you blogging on, like, Blogger? Yeah. Like,
no, where? it's WordPress.org, which...
Yeah, I know WordPress. Okay.
Yeah. All right. WordPress.com is different than .org. .com is like Blogger or,
okay,
you know, it's just like you go in, you create a profile.
Put down your thoughts, feelings. And...
But .org, you have to actually install, you know, the themes onto a server, and
I see,
you know, it's a little more
in depth.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I kind of like, you can take ownership of your site, and so
you jumped into blogging.
Yeah, and so Yeah, at the time, I was thinking about doing a PhD. I was, you know, getting my master's in literature, thought about getting a PhD, wanted to, you know, pursue that as a career, and I thought...
Dr. Stenzinger.
But I had grown disillusioned with the 18th century because I was reading a bunch of old dead white guys that, you know, their satire was very relevant at the time, but satire about King George III is not relevant anymore.
No.
You know, and there's so much going on in America and in our society that I just completely felt removed, you know, being in England, studying old dead white guys, I just felt removed from my own time. And so I started to like reject that and focus more on, you know, the Daily Shows and the John Olivers and Samantha Bee. And so I was thinking of moving on to a PhD in like more contemporary modern satire and focusing on, you know, how satire has evolved over, you know, the centuries. And so that's why I started the blog, so that I could just get some content of like, this is how Colbert compares to Swift, and, you know, just something to show a future university.
Well, the benefit of that is really great, because even if you're giving it out to everybody else, it really does help kind of differentiate the times, right? I mean, you're giving people parts of history that nobody's maybe even touched on or cared to look at. Like, I wouldn't know who they were. Right. I know who Stephen Colbert is.
You're a pioneer bridging the gap.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Once I started doing this, I started enjoying this more than I did, you know, my academics. So so I ended up just almost immediately moving away from the comparison and just like, you know, writing about in modern time. Yeah, writing about
it's Colbert. Too colorful to not.
Right.
I mean, during those times, everything was locked in such a, you had such, what's the word? You have such like little small environments.
Mm-hmm.
Where here, because of media and everything else, everything is so mixed and it's so spread out that, you know, you have access to it. You have a big, you know, palette,
right.
I suppose.
Yeah, and that's another thing, was my own personal writing. I was a poet. I was a satirical poet, and I focused on more traditional forms because I was studying traditional forms. And that was another thing that I've kind of moved away from, because it's, you know, it was relevant 300 years ago when people read poetry, but satire needs to have an audience. Like, the purpose of satire is to, you know,
be read by others. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, I get that.
You know, if you're going to critique your time, you know, people in your time need to read it or consume it.
Any other thing, it's a journal entry.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
And so, I moved away from poetry, and I kind of moved away from all 18th century anything. And so I'm just focusing on, that's why I ended up going to Second City in Chicago, which is, you know, a bastion of satirical, you know, like training.
And yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the guys that write for Colbert and for, you know, shows like Veep and, you know, just these really great satirical shows come out of Second City.
Yeah, agree. So, and the website, again, thelanx.com, what is The Lanx?
Well, that goes back to the earliest days of satire, which started in the ancient Romans. And Lanx Satura is where the word satire comes from, Satura. Lanx Satura was like a smorgasbord, kind of. It was like a plate that they would serve at parties with all kinds of different stuff. And so at the time, like, satire was kind of a variety of different forms and styles. And so it was called, you know, they just pulled the name satire from Lanx Satura.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
So in essence, your website is a plate of varieties of...
Yes, exactly.
...of different satirical news sites.
Uh-huh.
Or snippets.
Snippets, yeah.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. I mean, I cut the cord. You know that. I've no, like... And in Canyon Country, there is no freaking television signal at all. So,
I get it. When you said I cut the cord,
yeah, you just had a baby.
Well, congratulations! I cut a pair of scissors.
I cut that cord too.
Good,
but I get literally all of my news from The Daily Show, mm-hmm. Samantha Bee, Bill Maher. So, I mean, is that a bad thing for someone to base their opinion?
Well, I mean, the thing about news is that so much of it is biased anyway. You know, you have the liberal media and you have a conservative side. And so when news ends up being just the facts of it anyway, so if you're getting the facts of it from Seth Meyers and he's throwing some jokes in, I think that's fine.
Yeah,
I agree. I think it's better than not knowing anything. I do feel that just like anything else, you know, you're pulled in so many directions with today's media that, you know, if you tend to like that stuff, most cases you're going to tend to read and digest material that tends to think the same way.
Right.
So, you know, I'm completely guilty of that. I don't tend to read things that speak terribly negative of the ideas that I tend to live by or the values. Or those things, but I get that.
I do my best to not read at all. So, it's all video.
Oh, that I get it.
All video.
Yeah. Dan's like Dan'll get like instructions on how to assemble his television, and he'll look at the book and he's like, "Nah, I'm just gonna go straight to YouTube."
YouTube everything.
Yeah,
I YouTube how to do everything.
How to change my baby's diaper. YouTube did.
There's a video. There.
Yeah.
How to do a podcast. YouTube.
Thank you for that one, YouTube.
going on with what you were just saying, Cody, I mean, it's so easy with the internet now and with Facebook, you can like, you know, the pages you want to and you don't have to like the ones you don't. So you're getting the news that you want to hear, you know, and so that, whether it's liberal or conservative. I mean, the conservatives have their AlanBWest.coms and their, you know,
Rush Limbaugh's
independent journal reviews or whatever they are. You know. And so, yeah, it's very easy to kind of focus on what you want to focus on. And, you know, John Oliver does a good job of bringing news with humor.
So. No, he does. He does a very good job of it. He's better than anybody I've ever seen, actually, in my opinion.
I would describe this form of news today as, I'd compare it to, like, you know, putting sugar on your Wheaties, you know?
What?
Like,
I'm gonna need you to
you're
explain
getting the
that
basics and you're putting some sugar
the
on
news,
it.
The news, like, the facts of the news are very plain and boring. And which is Wheaties, a brand cereal with no flavor.
Breakfast
and then,
of champions.
Yeah, it's the breakfast of champions, sure, because it's the truth.
But it's the healthiest cereal.
Right, it's the truth. It's the bare truth of the matter. But then you sprinkle 2 scoops of sugar on it, and you can kind of enjoy it. You enjoy the truth. That's my analogy.
Wow.
You're looking at me like I'm a crazy person.
No, dude, I was listening to what you were saying, but then at the same time, I came across a news article that was just posted on CNN.
Ah.
2 children, man dead after sharp kite strings slit throats.
Oh my God.
That's the headline. Sorry, I know I'm like totally going off on a tangent, but this is really crazy.
How do you make a joke about that?
You can't. Where's the satire, guys?
Yeah.
So, Dan, I know we're going to kind of go off the satire topic here real quick.
Okay.
Dan calls me the other day. Mm-hmm. Or I look online and he's posted a picture on his tweets.
Which Dan?
Dan Hill.
Ah.
Posted this picture on his tweets and I reach out to him. I call him because I have some questions. And he's telling me he's watching Backdraft.
Woo!
The 1991 hit by Ron Howard featuring the stars Billy Baldwin and none other than Kurt Russell.
Bingo! And Bobby D.
Talk to me about it.
Oh my God.
Okay. Caleb wants to know the plot.
I need you
to give us the plot.
I've never seen it.
You've never seen Backdraft?
That's the only Ron Howard movie I've never seen.
See Money.
Oh, well, sorry. Not everything's far and away.
Let me tell you. Okay. So, because of a cool podcast, The Countdown Pod, Film and Television, they did a Kurt Russell, top 10 Kurt Russell movies.
Yeah.
And consistently, the tweets they were getting back and their lists had Kurt Russell very high. And I like to think of myself as a Kurt Russell fan.
As you should.
And I love Big Trouble in Little China. That's my number one.
You love Big Kurt Trouble Russell. In Little China. I just put Kurt Russell in any movie. Name a movie and he's not in, and I'll tell you the role he's in and how he makes it better.
Furious 7.
Vin Diesel's role.
No, he's in Furious 7.
I know.
Oh, is he really?
He's saying pick something that he's not in.
Tell me something he's not in.
Wizard of Oz.
Wizard of Oz. Tin Man goes ballistic, shoots out razors out of his hands, kills Oz, says, Dorothy, I'll do anything you need.
Anything wins. You need.
Wins.
It's crazy that he started doing like cheesy Disney movies.
I know, right?
The computer wore tennis shoes. You ever seen that?
I didn't see that, no. I mean, Kurt Russell is the prototypical child star.
What about that Kurt Russell movie where he's like a superhero dad?
Sky High.
Sky High.
Oh, that's right.
Man, Sky. I almost auditioned for that.
Really? Did you really?
Yeah.
So would you play Kurt Russell?
Yeah. Prop Store had a cape. Who had Kurt Russell's cape from Sky High?
Oh, nice.
Oh, nice.
So you auditioned?
Yeah, no, I didn't, because this was before I moved to LA. I was taking acting class in Chicago. And I had to miss a day of acting class. And when I got there the next week, everyone was like, hey, we were asked to go audition for this superhero like high school movie. And I was like, what?
I missed it.
Yeah, I missed it. And then a year later, Sky High comes
Sky
out.
Sky High, starring Kurt Russell.
With Mary Elizabeth Winstead. And Michael Ingrigno.
Oh yeah, he was good.
yeah.
But Backdraft was on their list, and I was like, man, I feel bad because I've never seen Backdraft. And like the cover looks cool. It's just sitting at Prop Store on the thing, and I always see it, and I'm like, all right, I'm taking this home, and I'm watching Backdraft tonight. And then I get a call from Cody Frederick.
Yep.
And he's like, yo. Maddie just told me you posted a picture and you never seen Backdraft. And I was like, yeah, I never seen it, man. What's the problem? And he was like, you need to watch Backdraft right now. So I saw it. I loved it. It's old and you can tell, but I loved it. There's like, it's like a fire every day in Chicago.
Yeah, it really is. It takes place in Chicago, which is also another reason you should watch
it.
Yeah,
I do need to see it.
Because if you're from an area and you need to see a movie in that area, it's there.
It's like really every great. Day. Instead of rain, it's a fire.
Yeah, it's pretty much
like,
a fire.
No!
And actually, this movie, so we had a conversation. I was watching it today. I was having it play in the background at work today.
Okay.
And one of the guys I work with is a huge fan of Backdraft. Mm-hmm. And he had told me that it actually had come out 3 months after Silence of the Lambs.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are parallels to this movie in Silence of the Lambs. Because in Silence of the Lambs, Jodie Foster goes and talks to Anthony Hopkins, right?
Uh-huh.
And he tells her, like, how to catch this serial murder, whatever the hell it is, right? In Silence of the Lambs.
Mm-hmm.
In this movie, there's this crazy arsonist.
Yes, dude,
who's like a nut bar.
I thought the same thing.
And
it was like
3 months out. And in Silence of the Lambs, the bad guy in Backdraft, the one that actually ends up committing the arson. I'm not going to say.
Right.
He's also in Silence of the Lambs.
Is he?
Yes, he is.
He's also in Training Day.
Yes, he is.
And he's a snake in that, too.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, I thought that same thing. I was like, this is very Lecter meets Foster.
It was. It very much had that feel. You had these, like, he had the scars on his head, and he was just,
burn
kids and children and moms and dads.
But that happens in film, you know. There's The Illusionist and The Prestige.
Oh, those were great movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They weren't like Backdraft, though.
But, I mean, they were both... like old school magician movies that came out at the same time.
Yeah, actually, what you don't know about those movies is they are satirical takes on the times of the 1800s.
Oh!
Magic.
See how we did that? See how we brought it back?
I did.
That
I
was
saw
magical.
That.
Thank but, you. Like, Backdraft, it just has that, like, old movie vibe.
Yeah.
Of, like, set. And like some of the first explosion you see that the first fire.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where he's like, "Come on, kid, get on the fire truck with me, and we're going."
Yeah.
And they go, and like the house like explodes.
Yeah.
And it's this clear like Universal Studios freaking effect of like even like a haunted house could do this now. Of like the wooden house like pops open and then this like burst of fire comes out.
What was really great about it is there's this sequence at that point where the helmet of one of the firefighters falls down and it hits the ground. And then all of a sudden, out of the foreground, some sticks seem like they're just thrown into the shot, like some fired sticks. And it's like, well, somebody just threw those into the sea, and it's not like they were, you know. Anyway,
some high quality visual effects.
Yeah, and
actually, it's one of the first movies they did digital compositing on, is what I was told.
Really?
Yeah.
This version that I watched on Blu-ray has a snippet from Ron Howard at the beginning.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
what does he say?
He's basically talking about it, and he's like, "Look, we shot this thing, and." The fire, to be honest, didn't look good. We didn't like it. He's like, so we went back and we worked with our stunt crew, the team, and our visual effects people, and we were like, how can we make this more real and better? So they went back, and I mean, a lot of those scenes are like, even today, I'm like, how did you guys do that?
And they were all very practical. It was a huge production for the film, for the fire piece, because they actually used real fire. They ran these guys through real fire training school.
Like, Kate, you will see, like, the sets are like, what? This, like freaking levels of homes are just, like, cracking and falling. And, like, I think you'll really dig it.
Okay, gotta watch
it. You'll dig it.
You do. You need to watch it. It's basically... You basically watch Snake Plissken walk through burning buildings, and it's awesome. And he's wearing the eye patch, and he's just like, dangerous.
You go, I go. There's a lot of like camaraderie. Like,
there is.
Get the hose.
Yeah, I love. They have there's these moments where there's a lot of bro fights.
Yeah,
because Kurt Russell's the older brother of his younger brother, and their dad died in a fire. Right. Ooh. Anyway, so. The peril of these two.
That was a big thing in the 90s. It Twister. Was,
yes, exactly. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Oh, yeah. Twister, what else?
You just want to be like Twister.
It was a big thing. I don't know. Feel of Dreams, probably.
Yeah, it was 89. Anyway.
Little brother can't be as good as big brother, and dad's dead. And
yeah.
Yeah.
But those two would fight often. There were just scenes of them just yelling at each other.
Oh, yeah.
I felt like I was watching The Breakup. Anyway.
I do have to... There's one moment where... Okay, so Billy Baldwin, he's brothers with Kurt Russell, and he just becomes a firefighter, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And Kurt Russell looks at him like the night before, and he's like, "Hey, don't be late to work." Billy Baldwin's like, "I hate you, brother," basically, in his face. He, the next morning, he wakes up late, of course, tries to start his car, doesn't work. So he just sprints to the firehouse and just, like, magically, he almost gets there and then they're going to a fire. So his very first freaking day on the job, he has to, like, "Oh, I'm fumbling around, little brother. Like, I have to jump on the fire truck and get dressed in the fire truck and then fight the biggest fire ever in Chicago."
It's a movie, man.
It's a movie.
And Robert De Niro's in it.
Oh,
so his character is actually really great.
Yeah, he's a pretty.
I mean, he's pretty much in, especially between like, you know, 75 and 2000. De Niro was just, his roles were just epic.
How'd it hold up for you, having seen it before?
Well, you know, it's been a while since I'd originally seen it. I think it's been 5-6 years. Yeah. And when I watched it, there's some cheese moments.
Yeah.
Like the brother fighting thing that happened multiple times.
Yeah.
I was just like, Jesus, you two just need to just let it go already. Like they're fighting, like little brothers fighting. "You're not working hard enough.
Yeah.
You're not giving it your all.
Where were you?
You know how Dad would feel about this." it was exhausting. It was so exhausting.
Oh my God.
But from a visual standpoint, I thought it was great.
Yeah,
It's a movie. It's a practically done movie. It's the way movies... You want to see movies made this way.
Yeah. You make that movie today, all the fire is CG.
All the fire is CG. Actors are actually like... You know, you watch somebody spraying them with a hose.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
Without spoiling anything, these guys are like risking a lot in these shots. I mean, the sets are very movable, very dangerous. Yeah, and it's real fire.
It's pretty great. The end sequence, which is really this amazing piece. He's basically running across the top of the building, and it's like falling as he's running.
Oh, it's so cool.
It's pretty. It's actually it's a little cheese, but you've bought into the world. You get it.
Yeah.
They do this. The one thing I really hated about it is they did say they're like, the fire's alive. It lives. It talks to you. Fire's a real thing. It's there. It has a mind of its own. And it's like, no, man. Actually, scientists actually know how fire works. It doesn't have a mind of its own. The easiest path, the path of least resistance, is what the fire does.
De Niro's like, you have to kind of love it.
I know. There's this dark moment where they're in this like burned down building, and he's trying to explain to Billy Baldwin how fire works. And he's like, you know, he lights up. He's smoking a cigarette, and he lights some gas, and he pours, and he's like, fire just goes where it wants to go. It knows where it wants to go. And then you watch the fire go up, and he's like, and then you see how it just kind of breathes. It knows where it's at. It's alive. You have to become the fire.
You have to sort of love it to kill it.
Yeah, exactly. You got to show it a little love. It's so epic. It's so epic. Thank you, Bobby, for giving us that. I love it.
Watching it for the first time, it's not one of those movies where you're like, okay, this used to be good and now it sucks. It's like, this was good then, and it's very enjoyable now. Oh, it's, yeah. It's still a good movie.
It's still good.
And I dig it.
It's epic.
Yeah, man.
Hey, Ron Howard. His stuff stands the test of time.
It actually does. His stuff does stand the test of time.
What's your favorite Ron Howard movie?
Far and Away.
Caleb?
I don't know.
He's an Apollo 13 man.
Yeah, I was thinking Apollo 13.
I'm Apollo 13.
I could see it in his eyes. I saw the space.
Yeah, but then I was just trying to think what else he's done, like other than the Da Vinci Code.
Heart of the Sea.
Other than the Da Vinci Code.
Rush.
Rush was really good.
Heart of the Sea.
Rush was really good. It was a little all over the place, but it was good.
I'm Apollo 13
I'm a big
guy.
Fan of Daniel Brühl, who was Niki Lauda in...
Oh, he's a great actor, isn't he?
Yeah, Inglourious Bastards. He was brilliant. He's done a lot of good stuff.
He has done so many movies that people have loved. He did Willow. I forgot about Willow.
He did Willow?
Yeah, he did
Willow. Oh, I take it back. I like Willow the best. Well, tie Willow and Apollo 13.
He did Splash, Cocoon. He did Parenthood.
Oh, I love Parenthood.
Ed TV, The Grinch, How the Grinch Stole Christmas was him. Cinderella Man, he won an Oscar for that, I believe, right?
Mm. No.
He didn't win an Oscar for Cinderella
Man? No, that didn't.
Kurt Russell won the Oscar.
No, that ended up not winning anything.
No, it won.
No, it was supposed to be this big...
No, A Beautiful Mind is what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Because he did A Beautiful Mind.
Wow, listen, these are in sequential order of what he did. Willow, Parenthood, Backdraft, Far and Away, The Paper, Apollo 13. Good God, he didn't miss in the 90s.
He had a string. No, he had a string.
He didn't miss in the 90s. Jesus.
Yeah, he was he was on top of his game. Him and Brian Glazer just... Grazer made it. Glazer.
I tell you what, he makes some beautiful daggone children, too. Old Bryce Dallas. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Jurassic World.
Yeah.
She's a fine looking.
She's a beautiful woman. She's very much a woman. I don't see her as like a sex symbol. I see her as like just a pretty woman.
Oh, I want to save her. I want to save her from a burning building.
From a dinosaur?
Yeah, I want to.
From a burning dinosaur?
Yeah, I want to.
This dinosaur's on fire, and Bryce Dallas needs your help.
Yeah.
Zika 2016 update.
Ring, 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 ring.
So
what happened?
They found somebody with Zika in Texas.
What? It's in Texas now?
No, whoa, whoa, whoa.
It's gone from Florida to Texas.
That's the thing. It was in Florida, right?
Uh huh.
Now they're saying somebody went to Miami, got infected,
and went back.
Went to Texas. And now they're worried that it's flying around.
Oh, God.
We're going to get all these people back from Rio. Everybody's going to bring the Zika. Talk to me about it, Caleb.
Oh, I heard that there's also Zika in Illinois.
No.
Yeah, I heard like 27 cases.
27 cases from mosquito bites.
I don't know if they were mosquito bites.
Like a week ago.
This shit is like, yeah. It's like the McRib sighting.
Oh my gosh. I got to tell my brother stuff.
Yeah, don't. I don't want anything to do with Zika.
You don't have to worry about it now. Go get yourself some Zika.
John and Rebecca, they're in Brazil.
Ooh, that's right. Bro,
I think Rebecca might be in the air.
Yeah,
and John's got boots on the ground.
He's got like knee-high boots to protect himself from Zika.
Guys, be careful. Get some DEET.
Get some DEET.
Do not come back with Zika.
Get those DEETs because you're going to need them to know how to protect yourself.
Yeah. If you had to rank like the top five satirical news shows today, how would you rank
them? Yeah, where are you putting them?
Okay.
Where are you stacking
them? In like an aggressive style. Give them to me aggressive.
Well,
Yeah,
okay. Number one.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I think that the best person to ever do it, other than Jon Stewart, who is no longer doing it, is Stephen Colbert. The Colbert Report was amazing.
Colbert was brilliant.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was very, very, very.
But you know, his late show has had its ups and downs. It really had a surge lately when they did all live shows during the conventions.
Yeah,
he brought back his old character. He brought Jon Stewart on. Like that was a huge boost for him, and he was doing, you know, kind of the comedy that. And the satire that he...
That's his strength, been, really.
Yeah. Because, you know, he's on CBS. CBS is usually a little older audience. Like, he has to appeal to
a much broader audience.
Yeah, but at the same time, he's not going to be a Jimmy Fallon who is just there to have fun and play games with celebrities.
That's
true.
Yeah. So you had Stewart 1 or Colbert 1?
Well, yeah, I'd say... They're kind of in two... They have two different, very different styles as far as their The Daily Show versus The Colbert Report.
Right.
Now that Stewart is off the air, I can take him off the list and put him in the all-time MVP. You know?
Okay.
He's in the Hall of Fame.
So he's on your Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. He's in the Hall of Fame, definitely.
Who's your top five active?
Yeah. So Samantha Bee has been amazing.
Oh, she is awesome.
I haven't seen any of her.
Oh,
dude.
Is she really that good?
Yeah.
TBS,
she
Full Frontal
is
with Samantha Bee. It's
fierce.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Like there is no one I don't think there's anyone who speaks as boldly as she does.
Okay, all right.
And she was a writer on The Daily Show,
right? And a correspondent. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she would do a lot of a lot of correspondent pieces. And, yeah, she was great on that. But, yeah, her own show is amazing.
I love what she's doing there. She, like, goes after gun nuts. And it's, like, it's brutally honest. And, like, she just completely exposes...
The hypocrisies of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she's excellent. It's hard to rank them because they all kind of have different styles.
They do,
Because John Oliver does something completely different.
Yeah,
like with his 20-minute investigative reports on things. Like no one else is doing that. No one else has 20 minutes of airtime to do something like that. And so, or HBO's.
And he came out of Daily Show too, right?
Uh huh.
It's amazing the talent that has come out of.
Yep, Colbert did too. Steve Carell did.
Yeah,
Larry Wilmore did.
They just canceled his show.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Well, yeah, I mean, you could kind of see it coming a little bit. He just didn't have the audience. But there was no one talking about race like he was.
Really?
Especially like with all the shootings and Black Lives Matter and everything that was going on. Like he every night was consistently, talking. Race, and he would have a panel of people on discussing what was going on, and so he had a very diverse and inclusive show, and just didn't capture the audience. I hate to say it, but it just didn't have, it wasn't as funny as it could have been.
And I'm guilty. I did not watch Larry Wilmore. I was hooked on the others.
Yeah,
it just didn't trickle down to him.
Did I?
I
didn't watch him, and it wasn't because he was black.
Good. Okay.
All right, okay.
Noted. For the record.
I think the most underrated currently is probably Seth Meyers. Seth has done a lot of great things with his show lately. He's doing his A Closer Look segment, which is like an 8-minute Daily Show style segment where he takes on one issue, and that's been consistently like a really great segment.
Yeah.
And you know, it took him a while to kind of get a feel for what his show was going to be, but once he started doing that, you know, he kind of filled a void when, you know, him and John Oliver, because there were months when Colbert was off the air and John Stewart was off the air before Trevor Noah took over, that there was really nothing
on television.
Yeah, but Seth Meyers kind of filled that void for a while, and he's still doing great.
Yeah. How do you like Trevor Noah?
You know, I think he's doing a really good job under the circumstances. Like, yeah
he's replacing like a rock star.
Yeah,
so
he's Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
At first, I was like, "What is this?" Like, I was very like, "No," because I'd go to sleep to Jon Stewart, you know.
Right.
But like when I feel like it took him maybe a month, and now I'm like, okay. I'm back on board.
Just like any of the other guys. I mean, he's got to find his own voice that is not Stewart's, because he can't be Stewart, so don't try and be Stewart. So, right. You know, it's going to take some time for him to get in the swing of things and for people to accept, you know, that he's in that role.
Yeah.
Especially for somebody that was there for, I don't know, 15 years.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Do you know, like, backstory on him? Was he into... I know he was a stand-up, but doing this type of comedy?
Yeah, he's from South America, and so he grew up in like apartheid world, and so he's always had kind of an eye on political and social
injustice.
Yeah, and so he definitely has that voice, and in his stand-up, I haven't listened to like all of his stand-up from before, but yeah, he definitely like earned his spot on The Daily Show. But yeah, it's so hard to replace Jon Stewart.
Do you know if he was a surprise to...
Yeah.
Or if he was kind of like in the line?
No, yeah, because he was a correspondent on The Daily Show for maybe 3 or 4 months.
Before. Oh, he was? I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. He would do... he would talk back and forth with Stewart, just like little desk
the
pieces.
The desk ones, or was he like live?
No, like he would do desk pieces.
Yeah,
usually about you know, things going on in another part of the world,
yeah,
or
yeah.
Africa, or, you know, things that he still talks a lot about. He has more of a worldly perspective on his show, and so yeah, there were people who had been on The Daily Show for years that. I mean, Samantha Bee would have been the obvious choice. I don't think they even asked her.
Is that why you think she took off?
Yeah.
Like, F off.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I think she was offered her own show, too. Her and her husband, Jason Jones, who was also a correspondent.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he has his own show on TBS.
Well, I think if you're Samantha Bee, too, and it's like you're offered your own show or you're offered The Daily Show.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, again... It comes back
you
to
can't
Stewart.
Replace Stewart.
It's like, do you want to go in there being cold? You'll still have an audience, but it's going to be a big climb.
Yeah.
Or you just go somewhere where it's like you have a lot more say potentially.
Mm.
And yeah. It's, you know.
And I don't even know that. I don't think she even was offered The Daily Show. And yeah, so I mean, people were upset that it wasn't a woman that was chosen, you know, because at the time Larry Wilmore. I guess Larry Wilmore was on at the time, but everyone was a white man, you know, in late night,
right?
Except for Larry Wilmore, who had been on there for, you know, 8 months at the time, and so like Jessica Jones, who's great, she's a correspondent on The Daily Show, who is now going to have her own show too. She would have been a great choice too.
Jeez,
yeah,
it's just blowing up. Do you think it's good that there's so many different shows, or do you think it's being too saturated?
Well, yeah, I mean, people now have a chance to kind of pick and choose who they want to follow more, you know, and that's it becomes a shame for people like Larry Wilmore who just don't get the audience because the audience is being pulled to, you know, Seth Meyers and Colbert.
The broader voice will win.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
It's certainly true.
Just like this podcast game, baby.
It's cutthroat. It's true.
Yeah, but it like every morning I Google, you know, every single name of the host just to see who's talking about what so that I know what to post. You know, so I'll just Google Seth Meyers and see, you know, the news from the morning, who's talking about his clip from last night. And consistently, him, Colbert, John Oliver, obviously.
Yeah, I didn't even...
They always talk about them, but no one really talks about Trevor Noah and Larry Wilmore. They just don't,
really?
They just don't share those clips like they do the others.
Huh.
And so, yeah, they're just not getting, you know, the viral, you know, content.
And Noah did a brilliant job, especially with the two recent murders of the mm-hmm. New Orleans guy and dude from Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Like powerful stuff. I can't believe that didn't go viral.
I think that may have. You know, he might get one or two a month really viral clips, but like, you know, every morning you look at like Huffington Post and The Week and New York Times or whatever. They all post a little blurb about the Colbert clip and the Seth Meyers clip and. Consistently, Trevor Noah might get like three or four little blurbs from like Salon and RawStory.com where it's just like, you know, because the bigger news outlets know that it's not going to get
a lot of buzz and they're not going to put something out there that's not going to get views.
Right.
Yeah.
And with this website, I just started thinking about it when you were talking about all of these different news, satirical news sites, well, news shows. How hard is it for you to like watch all of these? Like, are you watching every show every night? And then how often are you writing? And
yeah, well, it depends. When I was living in Chicago, when I was really doing my most of the work starting this site, I had TV
right.
and I had TiVo, so I would record every show. But I only have to watch the first 10 minutes of it.
Right.
Then they get into the guests, and I don't watch the interviews.
Sure.
So all I need to watch is to make sure that they've done some kind of satirical segment. And so I don't need to watch, you know, Kimmel and Fallon and James Corden usually. Although James Corden follows me on Twitter, so...
Holla!
Yeah, and he retweets me sometimes, so that's,
nice.
That's pretty nice. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but you've got a major presence on social media, man. It's
yeah,
incredible.
I do. Well, I do on Facebook. I have a hard time on Twitter.
Twitter's it's a tough nut to crack,
it
man.
Is, yeah.
I feel like I've just learned Twitter. And
yeah.
I've been on it since like 07.
Right. Yeah, and it's hard because everything gets lost too
in
the millions of things that are coming through. So you post something and you get like you know, one like and one retweet maybe.
You've got to pin it.
Yeah.
And then just continue to tweet throughout the day. It's nuts.
Yeah, but I don't want to like keep reposting. But when James Corden retweets me.
Bingo.
Yep.
You get followers?
A few, like that's the thing. Like he'll retweet me, and I'll get, you know, 400 retweets from that, and two followers.
Yeah, that's odd.
It's hard, uh-huh. Dude. I've seen it too. Like people, Twitter is a very like scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Mm-hmm.
So like I'll retweet somebody, and then they'll follow me,
right?
Or they'll retweet something of mine, and then I'm like, oh, you got to give love to get love over there.
Yeah,
it's nuts. But so many people. Are hung up on they need the exact they need more followers than people they follow.
Right.
It's I don't understand that.
Sure.
I don't get it. Social media game.
It's crazy.
Yeah, but I have a great following on Facebook. Very active. You know, I posted about the cancellation of the Nightly Show the other day and, you know, had like 200 plus comments.
Jesus.
People talking about, you know, some people saying, yeah, he deserved it. Other people, you know,
really?
Saying, no, I love that show. And then bickering back and forth between each other.
Does he think that it's racial? that it's racially charged?
Well, he he's made jokes about it, but I don't think he really thinks that. He knows it's the audience, you know. Because he was only consistently getting about 200,000 viewers a night, maybe less, maybe 175, and
that's not enough anymore.
No.
I think you got to be in the.
You got to be in the millies?
No, because a million's a lot of people, especially if you're on a cable network. Like,
really?
At least 300.
Yeah, you need 300 to 350 a lot of the time to be considered
on a daily basis.
Well, when your show's on, yeah.
And how do you even calculate that anymore with the way people are consuming television?
Well, a lot of the time, a lot of these ratings don't even matter as much. The big piece is the show's there because it is for the show. Like, it helps them send it out at that time every night.
Right.
But really, where a lot of these guys are really making the bang, like Fallon, for example, it's the viral videos. Mm-hmm. For them, it's like getting... Because kids nowadays, they don't watch television.
No, they're it's YouTube about the, and clips.
Exactly. So for them, the people that are watching their stuff are the people that are checking out their YouTube videos.
Mm.
And they're not seeing that. It just happens to be another way for them to present their media. So they're just trying to be in every single pot. And obviously his stuff didn't trend.
Right.
At all.
Yeah. I mean,
otherwise, like, if his stuff trended and nobody watched his show, they wouldn't cut that. Mm-hmm. They'd keep him up.
Wow. The power of the tube.
I mean, a big reason I think that Conan is still on the air is because of the fact that he has so many followers.
Yeah, he has a dedicated audience.
People love Conan.
They don't watch his show.
Yeah.
They don't.
They don't. They just don't.
They don't. They don't watch his show, but they'll follow him on his... I mean, yes, there's people that watch his show, and I imagine he has more followers than Larry did, but when it's all said and done, if you were to look at the numbers,
yeah,
it's all going to come down to his online presence. It's heavy.
Did you guys see Conan at Comic-Con?
No.
I think he was staying at our hotel.
What?
Yeah. And, like, he had this, like, full-on superhero costume made...
For him. I saw that on YouTube.
Yeah, he was walking down, like, the street in the direction that we would have left our hotel.
Right.
And, like, people were like, "We love you, Conan!" Yeah. And he had the full, like, cartoon hair, full, like, big C, like, Superman on his chest, and he was all pumped out.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
He's pretty great. Great. I'm a fan of Conan. He's not as satirical as he used to be, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when it comes to his 10-minute routine.
Right. Yeah. And one thing I used to do, what I did start to do in the beginning when I had more time, I didn't have a job and I was just kind of working a lot on the site, is I would post the monologues every day too. Because that is when Fallon and Kimmel and Corden and Conan are satirical, are during their monologue,
yeah,
their opening
yeah.
monologues. You know, they very topical jokes. But I just didn't have the time to pull all those clips anymore.
No, that's a big time thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe you can hire a PA.
Yeah, I need more resources.
Right, seriously, don't
more
we all?
Resources, more resources, please.
Which is going to take us to JC Rublev.
Yeah. If you have 10 or more out of town guests coming to an event near you, contact JC Rublev. They can hook you up. They can find the best deals in your area, anywhere in the United States. Sometimes out of the country. They're certified travel agents, so they can negotiate lower rates than that hotel can offer you. All right? You got a bachelor party, bachelorette party, a corporate event, a holiday party, a wedding, or a family reunion. You don't want to have to deal with contacting all these hotels and figuring out how much they cost and yada, yada, yada. Contact jcroomblocks.com. Use our name, Dan and Cody, and they will waive their consultation fee. And their service is completely free to you. I don't know why you wouldn't do this. If you're getting married, contact jcroomblocks.com. They can hook you up. They can arrange shuttle service, champagne in the room, chocolate covered strawberries. Who doesn't want that?
Yeah, and if you're getting a divorce, think about it. You need a bachelor party with all of your boys, and yep. you need a bunch of rooms where you're going to need some chocolate strawberries, check out JC Room Blocks.
Do it.
They'll do more than just get you rooms. They'll get you rooms.
Do it. JCRoomBlocks.com. They're on Facebook,
Twitter and Instagram, and they are ready to help you solve your problems. No one wants to deal with hotel people. Nobody. So let them. Caleb, how can people find you in life?
TheLanx.com, Facebook.com/TheLanx, TheLanx, TheLanx, Twitter @TheLanx. I even have an Instagram @TheLanx.
I didn't know you had an Instagram for TheLanx.
Yeah, well, I started doing, you know, compositing images with quotes.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, when I have time.
Sure you did. It's a bad joke, sorry.
And do you have a personal Twitter?
I do. I think it's at Caleb Stenzinger, at C Stenzinger, STENZINGER.
Awesome.
That is STENZINGER. Oh, it is Caleb Stenzinger, at Caleb Stenzinger.
And if you give Caleb 10 more seconds, he'll recommend Audible to you.
Yes.
I could not recommend it enough.
No. What? We're not
no, recommending Audible. I'm just saying that because Caleb's got like this great voice that's like, it's easy and relaxing and it's easy listening.
I was
and
like, now, wait.
When you order from Audible, you'll not only feel like you're listening to a book, you'll feel like you're in it.
Yeah, he's like
Audible.com.
The voice of lore. I'm like, wait, did we get sponsored by Audible? Because
no.
I'm not trying to rep them until they give me some money.
No.
I had to take voice lessons when I first moved here.
Why?
Yeah, I was an actor and I had, you know, an Illinois accent. And
you had a Midwestern accent. That's what. Oh, you were like Chicago.
Not even Chicago, but just, you know, my A's were flat. You know, come on, mom.
Get let's, in. Yeah. Come on, mom.
Come I on. Took,
do you feel like it helped you?
It definitely. Pointed out something, you know, that I flattened my vowels like that and that I kind of spoke through a smile, you know, just everything's very flat.
Yeah.
I wonder if I should go just for fun. Yeah, I mean, it would teach me some things, yes?
Yeah, I mean, you have a nice voice.
Thank you so much.
You have a voice for radio.
What does that have to do with this?
Voice for podcasting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, what if I wanted to make it better? I'm always trying to improve myself, Dan.
The world's your oyster, Mr. Frederick.
Thanks, I appreciate that. But you know how much I hate oysters. Sorry, I'm going to have a beef with him later.
Guys, thanks for listening to this episode of the Dan and Cody Podcast with Caleb Stenzinger from TheLanx.com, son.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Caleb. Bye.
Bye.
Everybody play the tough guy to shoot, all right.